Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. In the dynamic and frenetic world of Missouri politics, policymakers often focus on immediate issues rather than problems that may spring up far into the future. And that's understandable. If political leaders sat around thinking about things that could happen as opposed to what's happening right now, they'd likely be so riddled with anxiety and worry, they'd be unable to do their jobs. But a bipartisan group of Missouri House members are taking a step back and planning a bit for the future. State Representatives Colin Wellenkamp, a Republican from St. Charles County, and Marty Jo Murray, a Democrat from St. Louis, are part of a five-member future caucus. And they're trying to get a handle on really difficult topics, like how state government should regulate artificial intelligence and how Missouri may need to prepare for less federal help to deal with natural disasters. Wellenkamp and Murray join me in studio right now. Representatives, welcome to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, yeah, thank you.
Representative Wellenkamp, what is the Future Caucus and why does it exist?
Sure. Good question. So the Speaker of the House, John, he decided that he had been hearing from a lot of the standing committees of the House that there were a lot of issues out there that were a little bit further afield than the Emerging Issues Committee that is chaired by Brad Crist, and Brad's doing a great job with that. But there were these continuing drone of issues kind of hitting the state that had some complexity to them, and they were already in the news. You mentioned two of them already in your opening, AI and disaster preparedness. And he could see that these were coming down the pike, and they were, as they were getting closer and closer to being ripe enough for legislative action, they are getting more and more technical. And the standing committees, he could see, would need some assistance in assimilating and digesting some of these issues, and wanted to get ahead of the game a little bit, wanted to put Missouri on, at least on the House side, at least, on some solid footing so that we could start looking at these things and really help the committees be an advanced team for our standing committees before they are kind of hit in the face with just a lot of legislative proposals. So he decided, you know, we're going to put together a future caucus. Other states have done similar approaches, and that's our mandate. Our mandate is to really look at the landscape of issues coming before the state before they turn into legislation that the standing committees have to deal with, and really begin to take them apart, prioritize them, and make them a knowledge-based background where we can really begin to treat them legislatively in the House.
We want to hear from you. What's a long-term issue that you'd like to see the Missouri General Assembly tackle right now? Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Or you can send us an email at talk@stlpr.org. Now, Representative Wellenkamp, before you were a state representative, you were the executive director of the Missouri River Cities and Towns Initiative. You still hold...
It's the Mississippi River Cities and Towns Initiative, by the way.
Yes, Mississippi River. Thank you for correcting me. I don't know how to read today.
That's okay.
You are the executive director of the Mississippi River Cities and Towns Initiative. You still hold that position today.
Yeah.
And that may give you a unique insight to talk about one of the first issues the Future Caucus is tackling, how Missouri plans to deal with natural disasters at a time when the federal government could step back from providing meaningful assistance. This seems like a pretty daunting challenge, to put it mild.
Yeah. So in that work, the Mississippi River Corridor has seen its share of disaster impact since 2005. So since Hurricane Katrina, the Mississippi River Corridor has sustained over $250 billion in actual losses, and that is just in the counties adjacent to the Mississippi River itself. I'm not talking about the bill for the entire state that touches the mainstem Mississippi. That's just next to the water. So that's a significant economic loss that we have dealt with, the most expensive of which have been in the form of droughts. Droughts and intense heat are not as big news getters because you don't necessarily see the destruction in front of your face so clearly as you would a flood or a major storm event or a hurricane. But I'll just give you an example. The 2012 50-year drought cost our nation $35 billion in actual losses. This was a Mississippi River Corridor drought. And the largest and longest flood, inland river flood in U.S. history, was the 2019 Mississippi River flood. It was a basin-wide event. Areas flooded from Pennsylvania all the way to Oklahoma, from Wisconsin all the way to Louisiana. Huge, massive flood that lasted 9 months. And that, the total bill for that was $20.1 billion. So that just gives you an example of how much more destructive and how much more reverberation that a drought can have in the economy than a flood. And these events just, you've been through them, Jason. You've seen them. They're stacking up. They're being more persistent. We seem to break a record every year now. You remember 1993 flood, right? The 1993.
I was nine and living in Illinois, but yes, I do. I am familiar with that. But yeah. Continue.
I was standing in Old Town St. Charles when water was actually coming up onto the street, during that flood. And those events would happen every 25 to 30 years. Now, events like that, where they're record-breaking in nature and they have long-lasting effects, are once every year, once every couple years, or they don't stop. They last all year long.
Now, Representative Murray, disaster relief was something that became a not-so-future issue after the May 16th tornado in St. Louis. What sort of things did you see from this natural disaster that showed why the state may need to be more proactive in how they prepare and respond to disasters?
Right. So the thing that I saw, you know, as the tornado came through and ripped through, ravaged the community, what made me realize that the state of Missouri needs to focus is looking at how the federal government and delay response or the expected response from FEMA. And I know overall, like at a national level, there's a push to say it's the state's responsibility, and I feel like we felt that, whether that be the city of St. Louis having to step up with the RAM settlement funding, with the state of Missouri having to come into a special session to react to it. I think that's just something that showed me that, you know, moving into the future, if we have more of these natural disasters throughout the state, that we'll have to just look in the mirror to see what we're going to do about it.
Someone I know who used to work for a Missouri-based member of Congress made a compelling case to me that if the federal government gave states like, $2 to $5 billion each year for disasters and the state agencies were responsible for doling out that relief money, if there's a flood or a tornado or an earthquake or a drought, that could be more efficient than what we have now, which is frankly a very slow process, even from a historical standpoint. Mm-hmm. I'll ask you first, Representative Murray, what do you think of that idea?
I like the idea as far as it just being there and knowing it is something that we can tap into. But when I look at the long-term effects of like what natural disasters can be year in and year out, I don't know that that'll be the best approach. You know, I think when we look at climate change, the results of the policies that are made in D.C. affect that. So I don't think it's enough for them to just put it on the states to say, we're only going to cut you $5 and you all can figure it out.
And Representative Wellenkamp, like, I think that where that idea will fall flat is if the federal government just decides not to give states money. And then it's just basically like you're on your own.
Yeah.
And then that's not going to help anybody, because we've seen from this tornado that without significant federal assistance, people will not be able to rebuild their homes.
Yeah.
So what do you think of this idea with the caveat that it needs to come with a lot of money from the federal government?
Sure. Well, a couple things on that. I'm not opposed to the states taking a larger role in disaster relief, restoration, recovery, as well as mitigation and resilience. I agree with the president that that's probably a good idea, but the resources need to fall behind it. And FEMA plays a critical role in coordinating disaster relief disbursement because it's multi-state in nature. Rarely does a disaster confine itself to a state. There's usually more than one involved, and the FEMA plays referee, and it works with and coordinates between multiple states in responding to event. That's one. Over 40% of FEMA's budget goes to paperwork and administrative costs. So if you were to give each state $2 billion, for instance, well, be prepared for 40% of that upwards to be eaten up by a larger administrative system that now the state would be saddled with determining eligibility and other such things.
Peter in Phelps County called in to say that he would like to see the legislature address climate change. Quote, nothing else matters except for that. Representative Murray, what do you think of Peter's comment?
I think Peter is awesome. Thank you for the question or the statement. As you know, I think that that's something that's on the forefront. I think we mentioned it last time. Would you look at how Tornado Alley has shifted? And I think, like I said, the policies that we enact at the federal level have impacts. And if we don't do something soon, then we'll all have to figure it out.
Representative Wellenkamp, you're a Republican, but you're also an environmental lawyer, and you're well-versed in environmental issues. Do you think that people in your party realize the looming danger of something like climate change?
They do, whether you call it climate change or not. Actually, I don't care what you call it, but these disasters are facing us right now. You can't deny that May 16th event. Marty and I agreed that that was a record-breaking event. Talked with the mayor. She agrees it's a record-breaking event. We just had a 1,000-year rain event here in St. Louis in July of 2022. Like I said, we had the longest and largest flood in United States history in 2019. We had a 200-year rain event in 2016. We had a 30-year drought. We had 3 years of drought, Jason. 2022 through 2025 was 3 years of drought. That all had an economic impact across our state's economies, from agriculture to manufacturing to the drinking water economy to our drinking water security. So I honestly don't care what you call it. These impacts are happening. We've got to get ahead of them, and we have to have multiple solutions on the table that mitigate and make our state more resilient. And I can tell you that the solutions do not start and stop with
that was going to be my next question. What are some other states doing when it comes to disaster response? I'm sure that both of you are looking to your colleagues elsewhere in state legislatures.
So it really depends on where that state is. So if that state is on the coast, your attention, for instance, Miami and Florida's disaster mitigation apparatus, same with Louisiana. They're very, very focused on hurricanes. They're very, very focused on named storms, ocean level rise, and flood surge. If you're more closer to the west, like the Dakotas or Nebraska, you're really worried about drought 24/7. Drought and intense heat on your agricultural economy, which feeds your manufacturing economy. Here in Missouri, we kind of get a little of it all. We have to be prepared for, we have to be a jack of all trades. We have to be prepared for the droughts, intense heat. We've had our first wildfires over the last couple of years. Never had to deal with wildfires in Missouri before. And we have some significant storm events, not hurricanes, but we've had some serious storms with very destructive floodwater.
And also earthquakes in Southeast Missouri.
Southeast Missouri, yeah, the New Bradford Fault Line, absolutely. Yeah.
One of the other issues that the Future Caucus is looking into is artificial intelligence. So let me be really upfront here. I think that some AI things like the Otter transcription service are fantastic. I love being able not to transcribe my audio by longhand, and I fully endorse that. But as a journalist who does not like to see my work stolen, I am very, 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 very alarmed that many AI systems are being built with copyrighted material, often without payment to news outlets, our authors, our creators of that original work. So, Representative Murray, how do we balance the desire for innovation while also protecting people's intellectual property?
I think that's part of it, right? That's, in my mind, you know, when Colin or Representative Wellenkamp reached out about the Futures Caucus, it takes policymakers to come in and put in those guardrails that don't exist today, right? Like, I mean, most people, you know, you can download an app. An app is, like you say, pulling from intellectual property from people across the spectrum, whether that's in art or visual design or music. You just see it kind of touching everywhere. So, like, having those rights, you know, where you can maintain it, because at the end of the day, you can always reverse engineer an algorithm to see where it actually pulls the information from. And then, you know, I don't know if they create like digital keys of some kind that can tie back to compensate the people where that information is coming from. So
we're talking with State Representatives Colin Wellenkamp and Marty Jo Murray about the Future Caucus and some of the issues that lawmakers may have to deal with in the future. Now, the whole question of whether states or the federal government should even regulate AI is actually really top of mind right now. I was listening to a podcast recently with a former Dallas Mavericks owner, Mark Cuban. He has recently sold the team. He's just a guy now that, you know, has lots of money. He made the argument that federal and state governments should stay out of the way of AI, especially since countries like China are investing tons of money in it. What do you think about that?
My first thought is a businessman is the one telling you that. So, like, of course, they're going to say that the policymakers or, you know, lawmakers should stay out of the way. You know, I mean, especially from a perspective of innovation, not inhibiting innovation. But I don't think that's enough to say that you should step back just because you don't want to stifle innovation or you don't want to be able to keep pace with China.
And Representative Wellenkamp, I don't think Cuban's point is wholly invalid, but I just think completely unfettered and unregulated AI brings about the possibility of bad actors using the technology to scam people. Or, God forbid, they create an AI system that, like, kills everybody in the world, you laugh.
Yeah, no.
But that's a real scenario. Yeah. Like, one scenario I've heard is somebody says, make as many paper clips as possible, and then the AI system kills everything on Earth because they have atoms in there. So, like, isn't that a good case for government regulation of these things?
Yeah, I mean, I'm typically a proponent for government having a discrete role in things, especially when it comes to a free market and business. However, it is our job as elected officials to protect the public interest, and AI has tremendous potential. It really does. And it just in doing modeling of storms and major disaster events, AI has really changed the game and how we're able to do climate forecasting and modeling for how big is an event going to be and how potentially destructive is a storm going to be or how big of a flood or a heat wave is going to be. So, you know, and AI in the biotech area. Now, what we're able to do with AI and bioinformatics to map out more effective drugs and medications and treatments for disease, thanks to AI, we'll actually be able to create personal cancer-treating cocktails that are personally adapted to your genome and your genetics so that they actually work. These are great things. However, like any wonderful tool, it can also be abused and misused and used for nefarious purposes. And that's where us as protectors of the public interest, we have to step in and put guardrails in and make sure that it isn't going to be used. But, you know, Marty and I aren't we are not data scientists. Unless you have a background I'm not aware of.
I do have a background you're not aware of.
Okay. Well, there you go. I am not. I'll speak for myself.
Do you think that your colleagues know how big of a deal AI could be and how it has implications for government in the future?
I feel like they're seeing it. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if you don't have that type of a background or you don't professionally work in data science or AI, I think it's reaching us in ways that you didn't expect before, whether that be throwing a picture into a ChatGPT or whatever other model, and you can make it do whatever you want it to look like. Even the videos that I've been seeing online, like, it's hard to tell what's real now. And my dad absolutely wouldn't be able to tell you what's real. You show him a video on the phone, he was like, wow, that really happened? But I think that becomes very dangerous in a lot of different ways, especially when you look at presidential elections or federal elections. I think that we'll have to look at it from that perspective as well.
I want to pose a closing question to both of you. The Missouri House Future Caucus is asking legislators to plan for the future rather than just react to some short-term problem. How difficult is that when there's so much pressure to pass what's in front of you? Representative Murray, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I think it's important for us to be forward-looking, which is why I think it's great that we're starting now, because we don't have those bills right in front of us, and we can spend a little bit more time to bring the subject matter experts in, have those deep dive public hearings where we can really talk about things and not have all those external factors putting pressure on us.
Yeah. Representative Wellenkamp, how important is it to plan in the future, even though you may be distracted by short-term issues right
sure.
now?
Sure. And we want the Future Caucus to be that element that ensures that what does eventually get in front of the lawmaker to consider is a more informed piece of legislation that we've been able to digest and examine. Cybersecurity, AI, regenerative agriculture, disaster resilience and preparedness at a much deeper level, bringing in comparisons from what other states are doing across the country, even what other countries are doing across the world, so that what is presented in front of you is a better piece of legislation that's more informed.
And there's 5 members of the Future Caucus now. Do you think it could expand to more people?
Oh, sure. The speaker, Patterson, has said that it can certainly expand. Me as the chair, I welcome expansion. We just kind of recruited some 5 folks that were interested in this to be with us from all 4 corners of the state.
And bipartisan too.
Bipartisan too.
And yep. I guess even though this is a very Republican state now, you never know. 20 years into the future, Representative Murray could be the speaker not 20 years, because 20 you'd be termed out by then. Oh, 6 yeah. years into the future, you could be Speaker of the House by then.
We got a lot of work to do, Dan.
I guess in the 30 seconds we have left, we talked about AI. We talked about disaster preparedness. What's another issue that you would want to focus on?
So for me, I think a big part of it, and it kind of ties in with AI, but journalistic integrity. I think that we don't have enough as far as the type of information that gets put out and be accurate. I think that we need to have more rules and regulations around that, because how can you have fair elections if you don't have accurate information?
10 seconds.
Workforce development and education and training for our state to be ready for the future.
Representative Colin Wellenkamp represents a portion of St. Charles County in the Missouri House. Representative, thank you for being here.
Great to be here. Thank you so much, Jason.
And State Representative Marty Jo Murray represents a part of the city of St. Louis in the Missouri House.
Thanks for having me.
This episode was produced by Emily Woodbury.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.